living here would be. It would be filled with ferrets and tractors and apple pies from the resident cougar. Not at all like the life filled with challenge and success and self-accomplishment I want. I stand up and gather my things from the bedroom and bathroom. It doesn't take long. Before I leave, I pull out my phone and find my grandfather's number. It rings only once before he picks up. "Hello?" he says.
"Hey, Pap."
"Holden, what's wrong?" I chuckle in frustration. I just got done talking to Sophie, and we decided it was best if I headed out to Florida right away. He whistles between his teeth. "Are you sure this is what you want?"
"Yes."
"Not really, but what choice do I have? Should I give up everything I knew was right for me before this crazy trip to Tennessee?" "Well, okay. Do you need anything from me?" he asks. I look around the room one final time. I close my eyes and imagine her lying in bed, waiting on me. The smell of her skin and the warmth of her proximity that fills my core with a comfort I didn't know existed. When I open them, a chill rips through me. "Can you check on Sophie tomorrow?" I ask. "Just make sure she's okay." Pap sighs. "I don't know what's going on, but I assume it's more complicated than you're letting on."
"Yeah, kind of."
"I figured." He sighs again, heavier this time. "I'll check on her. Don't worry about that."
"Thank you."
The line grows quiet between us as we both take in the enormity of what I'm saying. I'm leaving. I'm leaving him and Sophie. And as much as I hate for people to need me, I'm torn. I wish Sophie needed me more and Pap needed me less. But I won't make her look like the fool here, like she fell for a man and got dumped within days. She deserves more than that. I'll do whatever it takes. "I'll call later this week, but don't hesitate to call me if you need me, okay?" I ask. "Absolutely." "I love you, kiddo," he says, "and I know you're going to do great."
"Thanks."
"I'll talk to you soon." "Holden!" Pap's voice barrels through the line as if catching me before I hang up might save the planet.
"Yeah?"
I ask. "You are a good man. You deserve good things. And if you get out there in the world and forget that, come home, and we'll remind you." I can't say anything. I can't tell him I appreciate that more than I could ever put into words, or that I love him more than I love my father. All I can do is nod my head and wipe the single tear slipping down my face. "Goodbye, Holden," Pap says, and ends the call. I hoist my bag over my shoulder and make my way out of the honey house. Pausing at the front door, I take in the dining room, where Sophie served the delicious chicken dinner, and her office, where Liv teased me with a soot-covered face. I can hear their laughter echoing down the halls, smell sausage cooking in the kitchen, and feel the excitement of another day here. Unfortunately for me, there will not be another day. This is it. This is where our journey ends. I step onto the porch and lock the door behind me. My gaze lingers on Liv's house before I climb into my car and head toward Nashville to catch a flight.
"Sophie, why are you doing this to yourself?" Liv asks from somewhere behind me. I keep my eyes fixed on the road, where just a few seconds ago, Holden's car sped away. I could barely keep myself from racing out the door and into the street and begging him to stay. If Liv hadn't been here, I might have. When Chad left, I was irritated. Sad, yes, but more frustrated by his audacity. Then I was angry that he left me in such chaos and ruin. But watching Holden go is different. My chest is splintered, as if my heart has decided to fray into sharp shards that press into my ribs. It's painful in a way I didn't know existed, and I wonder if this is what they mean when they say heartbroken. I'm grateful for the tears that blind me. At least I won't have a clear visual to haunt me in my dreams. I can make up details and pretend he looked back at me or that his taillights flashed as if he had second thoughts. Because I'm pretty sure he didn't. I wipe my nose with the back of my hand and ignore Liv's disgust. This is the way it was designed to go, I say. So why does it hurt like this? She pulls me against her again, as the dam breaks and tears flood my face once more. Her shirt is already damp from the first round of this, so I move my face to get a dry spot. There's no satisfaction in re-wetting a damp spot. It's softer, more cushiony. It reminds me more of Holden. My body shakes as I cry harder. I cry for my naivete, for thinking that I could pull this off without getting hurt. I cry, too, because I know I'll never be that naive again. The Sophie who marched into the clinic and asked Holden for antibiotics is gone for good. In her place is this Sophie, a woman who knows what it's like to actually love a man and lose him. Two things I thought I'd experienced before. Liv pulls away and takes a quick scan of my face. She then takes my hand and pulls me around the vacuum in the center of the living room floor and into her bedroom. Guiding me onto the edge of her bed, she finds a box of tissues and hands them to me. Finally, she sits beside me. "This hurts because you love him," she says. Her voice is without judgment, void of any levity at all. I'm glad for it. It makes me feel less vulnerable. I think about her statement. "You love him." I was pretty sure I might yesterday. I thought I did this morning. But tonight, I know I do. This is what love is. If I never have love again, at least I know what it feels like. And I'd take this pain over not knowing. "This is what men do," I say softly. "They leave. And this is why I should have held to my guns and told him to kick rocks when he asked to stay at the honey house." "Cut yourself some slack, sis." "Why? So I cannot learn from it? So I could think that it's okay to keep putting myself in positions to get hurt?" I dab at the corners of my eyes with a tissue. "I was right. I'm not cut out for this shit." "Oh, stop it," she hisses. "You stop it. You're the one that instigated all this anyway. You're lucky I don't blame you for this." She rolls her eyes. "You're lucky I don't get pissed off that you're blaming me for helping you to feel love for the first time." My jaw drops as I look at her. "I would have been just fine thinking I loved Chad. That was so much easier." We sit on the bed and sway from side to side in a slow, rhythmic pattern. It soothes my raw heart just enough so I don't think I might die. "You know something?" I ask. A thought just occurred to me. Chad and Holden both needed me. They both had something to gain from being with me. But neither of them wanted me. Neither of them fought for me. "He might come back," Liv begins, but I cut her off. "No. Absolutely not. I'm not even humoring it anymore." I stand up and kick off my shoes. "Don't rule him out yet," Liv says. "He's not coming back. He made it clear from the get-go that this was a momentary thing. He got what he wanted, and now he's gone, and I can't be pissed about it. But you know what I can do? Make damn sure the next man that walks into my life wants me as much as he needs me. I look up at her. Bingo, Liv. That's a golden rule here. I climb up on her bed and scoot across it. Jerking the blankets back, I slide underneath and get my head cozy on the pillows. Liv watches with amusement. What? I ask. What are you doing? I'm sleeping here. I pat the blanket next to me. Now come lie down because I'm tired. She laughs. Sophie, it's 7 o'clock. I'm not going to bed at 7. Then get out of here so I can. I watch her eyes grow wide. What? I'm not going home. I can't go in there and deal with it tonight. Fine. She sighs as she gets to her feet. I'm going to wash my face and grab some snacks. I'll be back in a few. I snuggle down in the blankets and close my eyes. Holden's face pops up immediately. His easy smile lighting me up from the inside out. My heart warms, and I wish for a split second that I could have told him I loved him. It's probably better it ended how it did. It just made it easier to say goodbye. He doesn't need the guilt associated with a woman telling him she loves him as he leaves for better opportunities. This is his dream. He's fulfilling something his heart set out for way before it met mine. And that's why I couldn't tell him that I love him. It would be unfair. And it wouldn't change a thing.
Chapter 29. Holden. There have been a number of mornings in my life that have started in pain. The morning after I separated my shoulder in Little League was one. Then there was the time my kitty, Leo, got hit by a car. That hurt. A lot. Of course, the morning I took a right cross to the face in high school didn't feel too good, nor did the sunrise after my first drunken escapade with my buddies in college. That sucked. But few of those events hold a candle to this morning. Today, it's a special kind of discomfort, a malaise that has managed to permeate every part of me. My body hurts from tossing and turning in a Nashville hotel last night, warring with myself as to what to do. I picked up my keys no less than 4 times to just hightail it back to Honey Creek and rethink this whole situation. My brain hit meltdown mode somewhere on the flight to Orlando. Every mile farther away from Sophie we got, I became more frantic. The Jack and Coke from the stewardess didn't even help. And now, sitting on the patio of a hotel restaurant in Florida, the hot morning sun beaming across my face, it's my soul that hurts the worst. The worst kinds of pain are bottomless. You can't fix them or repair the wound. You can't stop the bleeding or find a cure. It just sits there, festering, an open sore that screams with every move. That's what this is.
Can I get you anything else?
Roxy, the waitress, stands on the other side of the table. She's cute with her pixie cut and bright pink bubblegum, and deserves a medal for putting up with my broody ass for the last hour. Want me to take that? She points at the omelet I've yet to touch, the menu item I forgot I ordered. I blow out a breath. You might as well. She takes the plate and gives me an odd look before disappearing into the expanse of the restaurant behind me. I pull the chair with my briefcase closer and take out a notepad and pen. Scribbled on the front page is a hodgepodge list of things I need to do. I started it on the plane this morning, hoping that getting something on paper, some kind of game plan, would help ease my mind. It didn't. Staring back at me is a list of things to do to get my life started here. I need to call Montgomery's office and formally accept the job. Find somewhere to live. Move my belongings from Arizona. Check on Pap and Sophie. My temples throb, and I wince as I press them with my fingers. How this went from a best-case scenario to a nightmare is beyond me. I position the pen between my fingers and scratch another note on the list. Check on Dottie. I miss her this morning, too. I wonder if she's looking at the clock, wondering where I am and prepping her "you're late" line to fire my way as soon as I open the door. A smile graces my lips as I realize it's the day Joe will be coming with the floor mats, and I wonder if Dottie will finally pick up on the fact that he has a thing for her. My pen taps against the notepad over and over. I wonder if Fidget the ferret has been behaving, and what kind of pies Birdie will bring this week. I'm curious, too, if the man with the fish hook on his hat at Tank's is watching for me to come in for a coffee today. It just became a part of my routine. Not because I needed the coffee, but because I liked the ritual of it. It was sort of cool in a very weird kind of way to start to understand the threads of small-town conversation, and to maybe be a part of them in some way. What do you think about the mayor over there running for re-election? Someone from the round table at Tank's would ask me. You ever see a horse that won't eat apples? They'd ask. Or they'd point at something in the newspaper and want my opinion. It never mattered what the topic was, and my opinion surely didn't matter, but it was requested. Valued. As if they were starting to accept me as a potential piece of the fabric of their lives. And I left. They probably won't even notice, I mutter, as I doodle a ferret in the top corner of my notepad. The awning overhead moves in the breeze. The sunlight that filters in shines on my darkened phone screen. As soon as my eyes land on it, my stomach twists until it's raw again. Just before I booked my flight, my dad sent me a text. Have you come to your senses? I didn't respond. Instead, I just turned my phone off and boarded the aircraft. That didn't keep me from thinking about his question over and over. It's a reasonable question, in a way he didn't intend for it to be. It's straightforward. It's thought-provoking. Have I come to my senses? The question has slowed me down, and coupled with the flight to Orlando, it's giving me a lot of time to think. I'm in Florida, and about to take a position to lead a company. All the while, I've misled the man who's opened himself up to me as a mentor. I wrote it off at first, brushed away the first stabs of guilt. But the closer I got to the hotel, and every time I picked up the phone to call Montgomery's secretary to take the job, it got worse. How did I let myself get like this? How did proving my worth to my father become so damn important that I lowered the values I pride myself on? Here's your ticket, Roxy says, placing a bill face down on the table. You need anything else? I know I just asked you that, but you seem a little lost, if you don't mind me saying. I look up at her. Her face is clean and pretty, and it kind of reminds me of Sophie. An honest vulnerability shines in her eyes, and I find my heart shattering all over again. I guess I am a little lost, I admit. I'm new here. I have lots of things to do. Where are you from? Arizona. Taking a job at Montgomery Farms. She nods politely.
Arizona, huh? One hot place to another.
Coincidentally, yes. Now I need to find a place to live and get my things hauled over here.
There's an apartment open in my complex. A couple of them, actually. Some of the girls moved out since the boys aren't coming back on time.
Her face falls.
If you want the number, I can give it to you.
Sure. But
May I ask, why aren't the boys coming back? She grins.
My boyfriend is in the Marines. They're overseas right now. They were supposed to be gone a few months, but it got extended. It's sad, you know. Hard for them. But some of the girls move on with their lives. Some of them have to for school or for family support. There are all kinds of reasons.
Well, that's rough. She shrugs, as if she's resigned to the situation.
It's just how it works. I mean, I don't like him leaving, but he loves it. So I deal.
Has he ever thought about doing something else? Because, man, that has to be hard to go without seeing each other like that. I force a swallow. I just... Well, my wife is back at home, where her heart is, and... here I am. My face gets hot, and it's not from the sun. The truth hanging out there like that cuts deep. It exposes the rawness of the situation, and how simple, yet complicated, it is. But if anyone should understand, it's Roxy. She looks around the patio. Most of the customers who were here when I arrived have gone. The brunch rush now over. Only a few tables are full, and they seem to be leisurely reading on their phones or having breezy conversations with their table mates. Pulling out a chair across from me, she sits.
Would it be okay if I make a quick observation? She asks.
Sure.
I've watched you since you got here. And not watched you like I've spied on you or something, but more like I've been curious as to what your story is. Everyone has a story. Believe me, I've heard them all. And I make a little game out of it, if I'm being honest. I make up little backstories for people, and it's fun to see if I'm right.
She tilts her head to the side.
I was both right and wrong about you.
Oh, really? What did you think my backstory was? She grins.
I knew you were heartbroken. That was easy. You kind of wear it on your sleeve.
I beg to differ, I protest. She laughs.
About what? That you're heartbroken or that you wear it on your sleeve?
I think I hide my misery very well, thank you. Her face wrinkles up like she's embarrassed for me. It makes me laugh. That feels good.
So your wife is in Arizona, huh? She asks.
No, she's in Tennessee.
But you said she was back at home. Didn't you say you were from Arizona?
Her question echoes through my mind as she sits patiently and waits for my response. I gaze into the distance as I replay her words again and again. You said she was back at home. I did say that. She's at the Honey House. Her home. But why does it feel like my home, too? Why did I mean it to mean my home when I said it originally?
She must really love you, Roxy says with a laugh. That's all I can say.
My head snaps to her. Why would you say that?
Well, for one, don't take this the wrong way, because loyalty is my jam, and I'm in a very happy, albeit very distant at this point in time, relationship. But you're super cute. And you seem nice, and like you do well for yourself. And if she let you go, she must really love you.
It's like the world stops moving. Everything outside of the table, everything besides me and Roxy, blurs as I digest that.
I mean, I love my man, she continues. It's the only reason I stay with him. And it's the reason why I don't ask him to leave the forces even though he could.
Holy fucking shit. Wait, I say, sitting. My eyes are wild. I can tell by the way she recoils. Say that again.
What?
I waggle a finger her way,
The thing you just said, about why you don't ask him to stay home.
It's his passion. He loves it. And although I hate that he's gone and the worry that comes with it, I won't be the reason he doesn't live a fulfilled life. I won't do that to him. And I don't want to carry that guilt around either. I love him too much.
My brain scrambles to process this. Could it be true? Could this be why Sophie didn't ask me to stay?
That's how I knew I loved him. I've lived a pretty wild life, partying and carrying on. I've always said I could not be tamed.
She lifts her chin in a hint of defiance.
But then Blake walked into my life, and it was like my world was flipped on its axis. Like it started spinning the opposite way. And I knew who he was and what he did from the beginning, but man, I'd rather build a life with that boy and deal with the inconvenient stuff than to try to have a life with a man that didn't give a shit about me. Because I've tried that. It doesn't work.
She rambles on, and I feel guilty not listening, but my head has already checked out of the conversation and is checking into the honey house. If Roxy's right, Sophie didn't ask me to stay because she knew I wanted to come here. The exact reason I didn't ask her to come with me. If we would do that for each other out of respect, then... The key is respect. Pap's words ring loud through my ears. That's good. Always respect her. Prioritize her. She gave you her heart. I'm a fucking idiot. I'm a fucking idiot for not seeing this. I'm a fool for leaving her behind. I'm an idiot for thinking it would be okay to take this job after misrepresenting myself in the first place, and I'll be damned if I follow through with it. I know better. I am better. And I will be better. Everything is suddenly clear. My chair screeches against the patio tiles as I propel myself back. Roxy flinches, taken aback by my sudden movement. I shove my notepad in my briefcase and find my wallet. Fishing $100 bill out of the cash in the billfold, I hand it to Roxy. Will this cover my bill? I ask hurriedly.
Yeah, about 4 times.
Keep the change, I say, locking up my briefcase. My heart is pounding in my chest. Sweat is dotting my forehead. But it's not the right sun. Follow the sun, kiddo. Go where your soul feels warm. You'll know what choices you need to make in life if you follow the sun. Pap's words clang through my mind. Sophie. She's my sun. And I bet Pap knew it all along. I can't help but chuckle. I bet he's watching the dog clock with a stethoscope around its neck to see how long it takes me to figure it out. I start toward the door but stop. I turn to see Roxy watching me. Thank you, I tell her. You have no idea what you've just done. But thank you.
Go get her,
she says with a grin. I smile back at her. I intend to.
Chapter 30. Sophie. Gravel crunches beneath the tires as I pull into the honey house's driveway. It's a perfect almost fall day. The air is warm with a slight chill, a breeze ever so slight that it warrants a hoodie. The leaves on the trees in the yard are tinted with golds and burgundies, and I could sit on the porch swing all day and enjoy the shift in seasons. I could, but I can't. And not because my painting project can't wait, or because a couple from Ohio is coming this afternoon for a long weekend. I can't because I'm afraid that if I sit too long, I'll start to cry again. Sometime around 2 in the morning, I woke up and couldn't fall back asleep. The pain from missing him was almost completely overwhelming. If I hadn't been in Liv's bed, I'm not sure how I would have made it. Having her next to me kept me from breaking completely down. As the night crept along, I found a nugget of peace. It was a small nugget, a tiny sliver of contentment that I'd done the right thing. With it came a little hope. I'm not sure for what exactly, other than the fact that I didn't feel broken. Splintered, yes. Devastated, absolutely. But not broken. When I was left before, I was empty. Tangibly, in the sense that he had taken much of my money and some of my belongings. He had also loaded up my self-esteem, too. But as I lay in Liv's room last night, I realized how different it is this time. Holden is gone. But that was a choice I made because it was the best for both of us. And unlike my marriage to Chad, I don't regret marrying Holden. Although it lasted far less time than we expected, and maybe wasn't even necessary to start with. Seeing it from this side of things, it changed me. I know now without a doubt that I know what love is. I understand what it's like to be appreciated. For the first time, I stayed up late with a man and just laughed. Someone made me breakfast. Another person cared whether my doors were locked. Holden gave me more than a zero balance on my taxes or a new last name. He gave me the chance to see myself from a new angle. And it turns out that I like this me. That's a gift I could never repay him for. I take out my phone and pull up my photos. I flip from the snaps that Haley sent us from our wedding day. There's so much excitement in our faces, so much happiness. I wouldn't give that day back. Not a chance. That day led me to so much that I never would have experienced or learned otherwise. Everything happens for a reason. I grin sadly. My phone rings as I climb out of my car. Naturally, my heart leaps in my chest because it's stupid. I hope it's Holden. As if not to jinx it, I refuse to look at the screen before I answer it. Hello? I say, holding my breath. Hey, Sophie girl. Fred's voice is soft and kind, and the sweetness in his usually laughter-filled tone brings tears to my eyes. What's up, Fred?
How are you? You holding up okay?
I climb the stairs but don't go inside. When I walked in this morning from Liv's, reality hit me hard. I don't want to be on the phone with Fred if that happens again. Well, I choke back a half laugh, half sob. I'm hanging in there. You?
I miss the little shit already.
My laugh breaks free. I wipe a tear from my face. Yeah, well, me too.
He called me last night and told me he was taking the job. He said you were staying here.
I look around the yard of the honey house. It's where I belong. I've known that since I left for college, and I promised myself I'd never leave again. And I won't. Not even for him. I can't leave Honey Creek, I say. This place is a part of who I am. And I know that sounds crazy, and I should probably just reconsider leaving, but
no, you can't do that.
He blows out a hasty breath.
Holden left here because he's trying to find meaning in his life. I know he has all of these other reasons for it, but they're all inconsequential.
I lean against a post and listen.
He was raised in a very interesting way by his parents. His mother, my daughter, was raised with the values my wife and I taught her. Things like family and community were important to us, but his father has a different set of standards. He values things like money and cars and stuff that you could see. He's not a bad guy, per se, just a bit ostentatious, Fred continues. And it's just that a lot of what he values conflicts with the things Becky, my daughter, taught Holden. And then she passed away, and Holden was left as a teenager trying to decide who he was in the midst of all of this. I don't think he's ever really figured that out. I know who he is, I say quietly. Me too, Sophie girl. And Holden will figure it out. It just takes boys longer than girls sometimes. We're a little slower on the start. The first true smile since Holden left slips across my cheeks. Thanks, Fred. Anytime. If you hear from that grandson of mine, tell him to call his old grandpa. I have a feeling he'll call you way before he remembers to call me. I will. Take care of yourself, he says. You too. Goodbye. Bye now. I slip my phone in my pocket. Fred's words serve as a balm over the edges of my hurt. He didn't have to call, but I'm glad he did. And maybe he's right, I think as I enter the house. Maybe Holden will sort his shit and miss us. Miss me. I pad quietly through the hallway and into the kitchen. I'm trying to figure out how to end my day. With wine that I don't even really like, or with a bubble bath and a book, when I stop dead in my tracks. A piece of paper sits on the table. A purple goo oozes from under it. A goo that looks an awful lot like grape jelly. My throat burns as I inch closer to the table. My knees threaten to buckle beneath me as I reach the edge and see Holden's handwriting on the white lined paper. Sugar. I know you will be surprised to learn that I messed up. Turns out that I'm not perfect. Total shocker, right? I left last night to go to the Sunshine State, only to learn that the sun really shines here. I know this thing between us was built to get to an end point. But what if we are the end? There's no easy way to explain this. I guess I just had to know what would happen if I took the job. What I learned in my few hours in Florida is that I don't want to be anywhere without you. Is that crazy? I want a chance to build something real between us. I want to see where this goes. We can take it at whatever speed you want. I'm moving back into the blue room as we speak. But if you'll give it a try, I really think that this marriage of convenience can be a marriage for a lifetime. Holden. P.S. Lock your damn doors. My hand shakes as I set the jelly-stained paper back on the table. Blood pours through my veins so fast that I think I might pass out. I try not to run to the stairs and do my best to take them only two at a time. I pass the yellow room, the green room, and the bedroom with ugly flower wallpaper that people seem to love. Finally, across from the bathroom, I get to the blue room. The door is open. And if I didn't already know he was in there, I'd know. I can feel his energy spilling out of it. I get to the doorway and peer in. He's on the floor doing sit-ups. He looks over and sees me and springs to his feet. Sit-ups? I ask, lifting a brow. Really? Energy to burn. He eyes me carefully, as if he doesn't know what to do with me. I don't move either, unsure what to say. His chest rises and falls as he inhales a deep breath. Did you get my note? I nod. He waits a few seconds before chuckling. Damn it, Sophie. Talk. And just like that,
my uncertainty vanishes. It's a weird feeling, really, because nothing is certain. He wants to try. That I know. But I don't know if it will work, or how it will work, or what it really means at the end of the day. But what I do know is that he's here. He came back. For me. And even if he hadn't, I would have been okay. It's that last fact that's most important. That's the reason taking this step doesn't worry me. Because it took all this jostling, him leaving, for me to realize that I'm strong on my own. Knowing that, I can give him all of me, instead of parts of me that need putting back together. My lips tug toward the ceiling. So, if we're going to try this, we need an addendum to our agreement. Relief washes across his face. His fingers twitch at his sides, but he stays put. "What are you thinking?" he asks. I lean against the doorframe and take in his handsome face. "I'm thinking that I'm still not doing your laundry." His smile is quick and wide, and I'm glad he doesn't know that he could get whatever he wanted from me just by flashing it my way. "Good, because you do laundry how often?" "I'd like clean clothes weekly." I laugh. "And since I know you can make breakfast, I'm going to need you to flex those muscles routinely." I must be a sure thing, because he saunters my way. His smirk is back, the one that makes me want to shed my clothes without being asked. I'll only agree to that on one condition. He stops in front of me, peering down, his eyes dark and hungry. He grins. "You have to let me flex certain other muscles whenever I want." "Maybe not whenever you want," I say, trying to maintain some power. "But often." He lifts a brow. "Daily?" His lips are swollen, the bottom sticking out as if he's been biting it all morning. The silky strands of hair on his head are gorgeously messy, and the scent of his cologne hits my bloodstream like a shot of heroin. I tilt my head toward his. "How about now?"
"I like the way you think, Mrs. McKenzie."
His eyes catch mine before he sweeps me off my feet. My giggle pierces the air as he runs down the hallway and down the steps. "Where are we going?" I shriek as he takes the corner toward my bedroom so sharp that the tips of my toes brush the doorframe. He tosses me onto my mattress. The headboard slams against the wall just before he pounces on top of me, hovering above me, his face inches from mine. He grins. His eyes are crystal clear, his face lined only by the smile. It's the happiest I've ever seen him. And it's the happiest I've ever felt, too. This is the way I've always pictured my life. Maybe even a little better. For the first time ever, each piece that belongs in my heart is snapped into place. I wouldn't give it up for the world. I reach up and lace my fingers through his hair. "You aren't going to dangle spit in my face, are you?" He laughs.
"Not what I had planned."
"What do you have planned?" He presses a kiss to my forehead.
"Buying you flowers, holding your hand, making you laugh all night so you'll be sleepy the next day and think of me."
I tug on his hair until he falls onto the mattress next to me. His arms cage me in like he thinks I might try to escape. Silly boy. He peers down at me with a solemnness that takes my breath away. "My plan, really, is to love you. To be here every day. To learn what's important to you and make that matter to me, too." My lips quiver
at his words. "Holden, I want you to be proud of me," he says, smoothing his hand over the top of my head. "To call me your husband and mean it. To hear that little thing in your voice that my grandma used to have when she was talking about my grandpa." I raise up just enough so he can see into my eyes. I want him to hear this even more than I wanted to hear his precious words. "You are the smartest, sweetest, slightly annoying, but sexiest man I know." He grins. "And I respect you more than I've ever respected anyone," I say. His eyes cloud, and he pulls me close to him. Over and over, he presses kisses just above my ear. "I love you," he whispers just loud enough for me to hear. I'm not sure if he was afraid I wouldn't say it back or afraid it's too soon. But I don't care. I pull back, fighting him to get a bit of space between us, and look at him. "I love you," I say. "It's why I let you go." "I know." He brushes a strand of hair out of my face. "Promise me you'll never do that again. Promise me you'll never leave." "Oh, sugar. I'm not going anywhere." Time stands still as a slow smile creeps across his face. I grab his cheeks in my hands and lower his mouth to mine. As soon as our lips touch, it's game over. Or maybe it's just the start. Who knows? All I know is that I'm here for it.
Chapter 31. Holden.
"You're late."
Dottie sets the pen in her hand down and smiles. "Very, very late." "Am I? Because I didn't think you were expecting me today." She takes in my fingers that are interlocked with Sophie's. "Yeah, well, you might have gotten me there. But I can't say this doesn't make me happier than apple pie." Sophie laughs. "Good morning, Dottie." "Morning, sweetheart." "Dottie, have you seen my..." Pap comes around the corner and stops in his tracks. His forehead wrinkles as if he can't believe what he's seeing. He takes his time assessing the situation before him. Sophie and me standing hand in hand in the middle of his clinic. Maybe I should have called yesterday, but that would have required paying attention to anything other than my wife. And as much as I love my grandpa, I love Sophie more. I look at her over my shoulder. Sophie grins like a loon at Pep. My heart swells every time I see her and the happiness on her face. How on earth did a girl like her fall in love with a guy like me? I couldn't sleep at all last night, worried that I'd wake up and something would have changed. That maybe she'd had enough time on her own to think about it again and her conclusion was different. Not that me staying awake made a difference, but it sure didn't hurt. Besides, it let me revel in the life I've lucked into. "Well, well, well," Pap says, placing the folder in his hands on the counter. "Look what we have here. What's this all about?" "Turns out that your grandson is indeed a little slow to start, but I guess I'm pretty hard to live without." She looks up at me and laughs. "That's what you said, isn't it?" "Something like that." Dottie and Pap laugh. The sound fills the room. "This is what I never could have gotten in Florida. It's the one element of life that's hard to pinpoint, almost impossible to describe. It's knowing inherently, on some cellular level, that you're connected to people and a place. That your roots are somehow intertwined with theirs. My roots are here, in Honey Creek. It's where I matter.
It's where I can make a difference, and not just as a vet, but as a human being. It's where I can dance with my wife under the string lights in my backyard, because life isn't stressful from morning until night. It's where I want my kids to grow up and play with their cousins. I want to take them to the lemonade and get milkshakes after school. I want to stretch a sheet in the backyard and project a movie like they used to do at the Honey Creek Playground in the summertime. I want to grow here, too. Learn to be a better veterinarian, friend, husband, and man. I called Montgomery this morning and told him I was truly honored by the faith he'd put in me. I also told him I wasn't quite ready or deserving of the position and that he should choose someone else. He didn't quite understand, but told me I could always call him back. He'd be willing to reconsider me in the future. Maybe I'll do that. And maybe I won't. I glance up at Pap. His chest is all puffed out as he nearly bursts with pride at seeing me in his lobby. So, I say, feeling him out, even though I know the answer. You think you have a job opening around here? He grins. I don't know. What do you think, Dottie? Dottie pretends to consider my request. Her head cocks to the side as she wraps her hands around her coffee mug.
Maybe, but I have some parameters.
Shoot them my way, I say. She smiles.
You have to be on time, every day, and I'm not calling you handsome.
She looks at my grandfather.
Did you know he wanted me to call him handsome on his first day?
I did not, I tell her. You called me handsome.
Well, you are pretty handsome,
Sophie says, resting her head on my arm. Pap shakes his head as he sets down a piece of paper. Well, if there aren't any objections from the boss, Dottie, then I guess you start Monday. Be here when Dottie tells you to. Leave when she tells you to. And don't expect me in for 2 weeks. Wait, what? I ask, suddenly confused. Pap just laughs. Hell, if you're gonna be around, I'm heading back to Florida. The boat is fixed, and the captain assured me there will be beer on board. There are fish out there calling my name. We laugh, our conversation changing to Grady's dog and pies. And it hits me how strange this all seemed not that long ago, but how it now feels like it's just the way it should be. I squeeze Sophie's hand again. She has to wonder why I keep doing it, but I like the confirmation that she's there. I grab a seat on one of the chairs in the lobby and pull my wife onto my lap. We listen to Pap and Dottie tell us a story about a man who brought in a pregnant goat yesterday. Apparently it had a thing for crayons. Sophie leans back and rests her head on my shoulder. I keep her as close to me as I can. We sway back and forth as we listen to my grandfather. My mind ventures off into a time and place that feels like forever ago. The night I told her she'd have to act like she loves me. Little did I know that would start a fire that neither of us would be able to stop. That it would spark a love story that will pass down to our children and grandchildren. She reaches back and touches my thigh. And if she doesn't quit, we'll get started on that sooner than later.
Epilogue. Sophie. 1 week later.
Talk me down.
Liv storms into the kitchen and plops herself into a chair. Her hair is unruly, her cheeks red, and it's all I could do not to laugh. But I don't. Because when Liv is this fired up, someone is in trouble. Usually her. What happened? I ask, brushing against Holden as I walk by the stove.
He reaches for me, but I leap aside just in time. I was a half of a second from getting caught in his arms. That's a place I find myself often these days. But I'm not complaining. We've melded easily into each other's lives over the past week. He makes breakfast, and I make dinner. We do our own laundry. Evenings are spent watching a movie or reading out loud from romance novels, or taking walks around town. He even has taken an interest in the honey house and has been helping me pick out the new gazebo design. I don't know what the future holds for us. That conversation hasn't really come up. I just take it day by day and hope it continues like it's going. Because this life with him is the life I've always dreamed of. I think I hate my new boss already, Liv whines. Holden looks over his shoulder. I thought he starts next Monday. He does. But I got my first email from him today, and he's a dick. Why? I ask. She sighs dramatically. He's so bossy. Holden snorts. Well, he is your boss. Like that matters. Liv shimmies up in her seat. He could be a little nicer and realize that I'm the one that's kept that office running for the last 6 years. He's going to come here and screw up all my systems. I know it. I walk past Holden at the stove. He reaches out and pulls me into him. His hands lock around my middle, and his chin rests on top of my head. He does this a lot. If we're in the same room, he's touching me in some way every few minutes. It's almost a game at this point. How long can Holden go and not brush against me or reach for me? Thankfully, not long. You two were cute at the beginning, Liv says, her nose wrinkled. But it's annoying now. I can't help but laugh. It's just annoying because you're in a bad mood. She considers this. Maybe your new boss man will be great. You can't always read tone in emails, you know. Holden points out. Liv shrugs. Maybe. Now that that's settled, I have a favor to ask of you, Liv, Holden says as he lets me go. I turn around to face him. His eyes twinkle as the corners of his lips turn toward the ceiling. Backing away, I return his grin. What are you doing? I ask. He winks before looking up at my sister. Can you help me with something? Sure, I guess, unless it's the freaking chimney. I'm never doing the chimney again. Holden laughs. No, I need a wedding planner. My heart skips a beat as I look at him. Holden, what are you doing? He doesn't look at me. He stays focused on my sister. Do you think you can find me someone, Liv? Liv springs from her seat. Her mood is totally changed. Her hands plant on the counter, and she looks at my husband with wide eyes. Why? She asks. Excitement drips from her voice. What are you thinking? Well, I'm thinking that I need to remarry my wife. I turn to mush as I look at his sweet, handsome face. He turns his head toward me, and the twinkle from before has softened. It's now filled with a tenderness that brings tears to my eyes. I want to do it the right way, he says. I want you to have the wedding of your dreams. Liv squeals from the other side of the room. I blink back tears and launch myself at Holden. He wraps his arms around me and holds me tight against him. Let me plan it, Liv begs. Please, I'll stay within budget and I'll do whatever you want, but she's been married twice and I've not even gotten to go to one of them. And I say, moving my face from against Holden's chest, stop. So can I? Holden pulls away just enough to look me in the eye. His irises are my favorite shade of green. Bright and slightly wide and full of love. You don't have to do that, I tell him. We're already married. But I want to be married in front of the whole town. in front of Pap and Liv and Job. I want you to wear a white dress, and I'm maid of honor, Liv says. I laugh as my entire body fills with a warmth that I've never known before. Like the sun is shining inside me somehow. I'm taking your silence as a yes, Liv says. I'll get started planning right away. Wait, I say, turning around in Holden's arms. We don't have a date or anything. This was just sprung on me. Liv's face scrunches as she takes her phone from her pocket. Ugh, I hate this man already. She slides it back into her pocket. Okay, I'm going to go deal with Mr. Bossman's email. You two be at my house in an hour. I'll order pizza and we're going to plan a wedding. Eek! Holden and I laugh as Liv nearly skips out the door. As soon as it closes behind her, he twirls me in his arms to face him again. He studies me closely. Will this make you happy, Mrs. McKenzie? You make me happy. He touches the side of my face. But I want to give you everything. Every memory, every experience, every expectation. And I really want to start that by promising it to you in front of everyone you know. Tears pool in my eyes. I try to blink them back, but a lone, solitary drop streams down my cheek. Holden catches it with the pad of his thumb. You know something? What's that, sugar? I always thought I wanted all these different things in life, but there's only one thing I've ever really wanted. I lace my fingers at the back of his neck and tip his head down toward mine. I've just wanted someone to look at me like you look at me. How is that? I grin. Like you love me. I most certainly do.
We hope you have enjoyed our presentation of Like You Love Me by Adriana Locke, performed by Ryan West and Lydia Dornay. Performance copyright 2020 by Brilliance Publishing, Inc. All rights reserved. For further information concerning this program or other Brilliance audio titles, please visit our website at www.brilliancepublishing.com. No part of this recording may be played for an audience or reproduced in any form. It may not be streamed, downloaded, broadcast, or copied without written permission. Address all inquiries to Brilliance Audio, P.O. Box 887, Grand Haven, Michigan, 49417.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.